This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Several times I've referred to the opening of Rav Shimon Shkop to his Sefer the Shaira Yosher, where some very, very fundamental principles are developed. And I want to work on part of it as part of this evening's shiur. One of the first things he analyzes is the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu, that we have to be holy, Ki Kodosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem, because I, your God, am holy. And he brings the view of Rashi and the view of the Ramban, that holiness means, as we learned earlier in the Chovos Halvavos, holiness means not indulging in excess. Even if it's not anything which is forbidden, but not indulging in anything that is unnecessary and excess. And he questions that view. And he says, "V'im noemar de'ikar muvan hakedusho shehashem doresh mi'itonu b'mitzvah zu shel kedoshim tiyu l'yisrachek min ha'meisoros." If the essence of the understanding of this sanctity which Hashem demands from us means to distance ourselves from excess, then kedusha zu eino misyacheses klal la'Hashem yisporach. There is no connection between such sanctity and Hashem's sanctity. Then what has this got to do with that, with God's sanctity? If the essence of sanctity is distancing ourselves from excess, that doesn't apply to God. So then this isn't sanctity, this isn't real kedusha. And how do we understand the phrase of ki kodosh ani, you must be holy because I am holy? Because God doesn't indulge in excesses, therefore we mustn't indulge in excesses. What is the connection between the two? The concept doesn't apply to God. That's Rav Shimon Shkop's question. Therefore, I consider, says the Rav Shimon Shkop, and he gives a slight addition to the understanding, which puts it into clear perspective. Sheba mitzvah zu kol yisoid v'shoresh magamas tachlis chayin. In this mitzvah is included the entire foundation and root of the purpose of our lives. Quite a sweeping statement, that in this mitzvah is included the foundation and the root of the entire purpose of our lives. What is that? What is the purpose of our lives? Shiyeyu kol avodoseinu v'amoleinu tomid mukdoshim l'tovas haklal. That whatever we do, every action that we perform, has to be dedicated to the benefit of the klal, of the community. Whatever the human being does should be for the benefit of the community. That we should not use any action or any movement, any benefit or pleasure, that there is not some benefit for somebody else in it. If a person straightens his ways and has the ambition that all his actions all the time should be dedicated to the community, then all the things I do for myself also have an element of sanctity to them. Because even if I'm then eating or drinking or resting, relaxing, having leisure, anything which is refreshing me will benefit the community eventually, because as a result of this will be in the benefit for the, in the interest of the community too. But if he takes pleasure in a way that does not add anything to his own capacity, to his own ability to be efficient and contributive, such benefit contravenes the principle of Kedusha. So in a very clear way, Rav Shimon Shkop defines two things. He defines the essence of Kedusha in a very simple way, in a very down-to-earth way. Normally if you ask people what is sanctity and what is Kedusha, they'll get onto all mystical things and Kedusha and Kabbalah and all sorts of mystical spiritual things, but Rav Shimon Shkop doesn't. He defines Kedusha as simply ensuring any action that is dedicated for the benefit of the klal is an action of Kedusha. That's it. You don't need anything more than that. It's not a normal, it's not a natural thing for a creature to do something for the benefit of others. Animals don't do that. And even human beings don't naturally do that. That's the drive of the neshama. It's only the presence of the neshama, the human soul, that drives people to be willing to make sacrifices for others. And any action which is dedicated to the benefit of the klal is an action of kedusha. And not only a direct benefit, but any action which is going to be an indirect benefit to the klal is also an action of kedusha. So if I'm a person who's involved in doing things for the klal, doing things for the community, then my personal things as well, my eating and my drinking and my sleeping and my relaxing and all these things also benefit the community, because I use it to enrich myself, I use it to refresh myself, and that's going to enable me to give even more to the community as a result of that, and that's kedusha. But anything that a person does that is only for himself, that's not kedusha. So it's a beautiful definition, because it includes all actions. It doesn't divide actions into secular and into holy actions, any action. It can come out from this that a person can be learning Torah and it's not kedusha. There's no sanctity in it, because it's selfish. And there can be a person who's having a steak and it is kedusha, because he's refreshing himself and strengthening himself in order to do what has to be done. The definition is not objective in terms of the action, that this action is okay. Going to shul is kedusha, learning Torah is kedusha, putting on tefillin is kedusha, sleeping is not kedusha, eating is not kedusha. That's not his definition. His definition is any action can be kedush, and any action can be non-kedush, can be chol, depending on what it's doing, what impact it's having. Is it an outward impact or an inward impact? If the impact is inward, it's not an action of kedusha. If the impact is outward, it is an action of kedusha, because that's godly. That's the essence of what the Ribono Shel Olam does. What does God do all the time? Takes care of others. So any time that we're taking care of others, we're imitating God. We're emulating the Ribono Shel Olam. If our actions are outward, there is an element of godliness in that action. And then he ties it back to the traditional view of the Ramban and of Rashi. And it's along these lines that Rav Avrom Grudzinski makes the point that a businessman is involved in mitzvahs all day. Again, one thinks you're in business, you're involved in secular things. You come to shul, you're now involved in kodesh. It doesn't work that way. You can be involved in kodesh in your business, and you can be involved in secular in shul. It really doesn't. It's not a question of what you're doing. It's a question of what effect what you're doing has. Are you making a contribution, or are you not? Are you consuming, or are you producing? If you're merely consuming, and the purpose of your consumption is not in order to facilitate greater production, if you're merely consuming, that is not kedusha. If you're producing, if you're contributing, there's an element of kedusha. That's number one. Grudzinski says, what is the average businessman working, doing all the time? He's working out what are the needs of society, and he's trying to satisfy needs. That's how he earns a living, by satisfying needs. So all that thought that goes into it, how's he going to do it more efficiently? How's he going to do it more cost effectively? How's he going to satisfy more people's needs? How's he going to communicate to them that he's able to satisfy their needs? All this that he's thinking all the time, if he does it with some kind of feeling that he's making a contribution, that he's not just doing it to earn a living, but he's actually doing it to make a contribution, it's a ma'aseh shel kedusha. So the person who goes into business and thinks to himself, I'm only doing it to earn a living, that's its only purpose, and he thinks that that's a very holy attitude, it isn't. His attitude has to be, I'm doing it in order to make a contribution, and by making a contribution I will earn a living. But, and if he's making a contribution, if it's a tzovas haklal, then at that time, even though he's not doing an action which externally has the trappings of being a holy action, but since it's something which is contributive and productive, that is kedusha, says Rav Shimon Shkok. Now that creates difficulties to some degree with the way Yaakov treats Lavan in the Sedra. Not that Lavan treats Yaakov particularly well, but we expect a lot more from Yaakov. And we discussed last week already the whole question of how far one can go to protect oneself in dealings, and we discussed the whole concept of suspending ethical behavior when a person's survival is at stake. But nevertheless, there seem to be cases here where Yaakov deals rather dishonestly with Lavan. The one is, he makes a deal with Lavan that he'll take all the spotted sheep. Now, there's a certain percentage of spotted sheep in any flock. Maybe the percentage is 5%. Who knows what it is? So he makes a deal with Lavan and he says, all from now on, all the spotted sheep will be mine, and all the white sheep will be yours. He knows that he's got a trick up his sleeve. Yaakov knows what he's going to do. Yaakov knows that he's going to take those mottled sticks and he's going to make them, put them in the water, and when the animals come, they're going to see these funny sticks. That's going to cause them to give birth to mottled and spotted lambs. And we'll discuss in a moment how that works. But he knew he was going to do that. He knew he wasn't buying 5% of the flock. He knew it was going to be an enormous percentage. Isn't that misleading, Lavan? What kind of a deal is that? You say, and the man makes a cheshbon. He works out. You say you want the spotted ones. Fine. But that you've got some kind of cheshbon going on behind your mind, that you know how to make them all spotted. You have a technology that Lavan doesn't have. And to whom does that technology belong? You're a shepherd. Where were you trained to be a shepherd? You've worked with Lavan all this time. You're a salaried employee of Lavan. Okay, he wasn't paid anything, so you're a slave. Be that as it may, whatever the deal was, whatever the contract was, then you shouldn't have entered in the contract in the first place. That you did it because you wanted to marry his daughters, fine. But there was some kind of contractual relationship which suited you. And now you want to change the contractual relationship, that's also fine. And you make an offer, the offer is that you'll take all the spotted sheep. Lavan translates that into some kind of financial risk, and says to himself, so it'll be 5%, 6%, 7% of the flock will be spotted, so that's what I'm prepared to pay him. And you know that up your sleeve, you've got a technology that can make all the sheep spotted. And then you put, immediately after the deal is signed, you put your new technology into practice, and lo and behold, all the sheep come out spotted. You say, thank you very much, and walk off. Not very nice business dealing. Not very nice. We wouldn't accept that as normal business practice. We would have something to say about that. And Yaakov gets away without criticism. And we have it again later on when Yaakov decides it's time to leave. You'll remember he calls his wives and he says he sees that his father isn't so happy with him anymore. He's making a lot of money now and his father's a little bit resentful about it. So let's get out. So he disappears in the middle of the night. Yaakov, Vayisos bono v'znoshov al hagmolim. Yaakov got up and he took his children and his wives on the gemolim and he disappeared. Vayugad lelovan bayum hashlishi ki vorach Yaakov. And on the third day, Lavan is informed that Yaakov has fled. And he starts chasing after him. And eventually Lavan catches up with Yaakov. And he says, what have you done, Yaakov? Meosiso. This is very nice. Batignoives levovi. Gnoives das. You've misled me. You're a frum Jew. What kind of business is this? You misled me in the business dealings. That's one. And now you disappear in the middle of the night, without coming to say goodbye to me, without discussing with me, without allowing me time. What do we think when an employee walks out without notice? Just disappears. Do we just accept that? Do we think that's nice? This is Yaakov Avinu. But in Ahegis Benoi science, my own daughters you took with. Kishvuyos, you took them, Shvuyos Chorev, as if you kidnapped them. Couldn't you come and discuss it with me and tell me that you want to go? Lomo Nechbeso Livrach, why did you have to hide away? But Tignoi Vosi, and mislead me in that way. The Lord, he gathered to thee, and you didn't tell me. I could have had a farewell party for you, with simcha, with joy. There would have been singing there, would have been in an orchestra there, with drums and violins. We could have had a most magnificent party. And everybody could have understood who you are. And it could have been done in a way which was covered for me, which would be honorable for me, and would have been honorable for you. You didn't even allow an old father and grandfather to kiss his children and grandchildren. Ato hiskalto asoy. That was such an unkind thing to do, such a devious thing to do. That's what he accuses Yaakov of. Not very nice for Yaakov to be. And he's right. That's what it seems to be on the surface. His claims are not all that wrong. But Yaakov answers. And he says to Lavan, "Ki yoreisi ki amarti pen tigzol es b'neisecha me'imi. I was afraid you would steal your daughters from me. Sorry, I thought you would steal your daughters. You wouldn't let me go. You would kidnap my wives, and I would be stuck. That's why I did it. So I thought I had to go." Pretty weak answer. Person comes along and says, "Sorry, I had to disappear in the middle of the night, because I was afraid you wouldn't let me go." Very weak. And how do we reconcile all this with what we learnt on Kedusha a everything a person does has to be the tevas haklal, he's got to be thinking of the wider picture. You see Yaakov acting very selfishly on the surface, taking care of his own needs, making sure he's got lots of money and that he makes lots of spotted sheep, and getting out in the middle of the night without telling Lavan. There seems to be an enormous self-interest rather than a care for the larger issues. What is that? But Rav Shimon Shkop goes on and he says, Omnan, however, im yomar ha'odom la'achnia es tivoy la'agia l'midu yaseiru al shiloyeh benafshe shum machshovu shifal ha'itiv la'atzmai. If a person thinks it might be a good idea to go to the extreme in sanctity, and that he should do nothing for himself, only for the community, v'chol she'ifosov yiyu rak lehitiv la'acherim, and everything he does should be only for the others, v'oifin kazet yiyu she'ifosov la'agia l'kdushas ha'boyer izborach, to reach levels of sanctity that are akin to Hashem's, because Hashem's intention is only to do good to the creation and not to do any good for himself at all, and the person wants to follow this and thereby reach high levels of perfection. Therefore Chazal tell us in this Medrash, says Rav Shimon, that's not okay. We are not permitted to attempt to approximate Hashem's Kedusha, Hashem's sanctity, to this degree. Shekedusha sabayir elamala mekedusha seina, because His sanctity is greater than ours. Shekedushosu yizborach hirak ledivroyim v'loy la'atzmo yizborach, because Hashem's sanctity is only for us and not for Him at all. Whereas, avar mashirutim itonu einu boyifan zebet, what Hashem wants from us is not that way. Sharei hoyre lonu Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva taught us, chayecho kodvin, your life comes first. Take care of yourself before you take care of other people. And that's why the Chazal learn, love your neighbor as yourself in the negative. That means, don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself. But when it comes to positive actions, a person must put his own good first. So says Rav, warns Rav Shimon Shkop, you can't take it to an extreme. It's true that in every action there should be thought of benefiting the community, but there also has to be an awareness of oneself. One can never sacrifice oneself for the benefit of the community. One has to take care of one's own survival. So we could say very simply, here we see, so Yaakov's got to take care of himself. It would be very nice to take care of Lavan and the whole community there, and to be a Kiddush Hashem, because that's one of the things that Lavan is accusing him of. What kind of Chilul Hashem is this? Everybody knows you work for me. Everybody knows what you've done for me. Everybody knows you're my son-in-law. All of a sudden, my friends are going to come around. They're going to say, where's Yaakov? And I'll have to say, don't know. Disappeared in the middle of the night. It's not very nice. It doesn't look nice for you. It doesn't look nice for me. So they'll say, yeah, but Yaakov's worried about his survival. And when survival is at stake, you can do all sorts of things. And that, in fact, ties in with a little conversation that Rochel and Yaakov had on that very first day of their meeting. It was a very romantic meeting, and Yaakov in fact proposed to her. Omar Leila, the Gemara says in Bava Basra Kuf Chaf Gimel, Min Sibisli, please marry me. Omar Leila, she said to him, In, okay, I'm prepared to marry you. Miu, however, Abo Ramo, I must tell you a little bit about my yichs. My father's a crook. That's the first thing you need to know. The lo yachlus le. And I want you to know he's such a crook that you won't be able to handle him. And I need to tell you that before we go any further. Omar lo, mayram use. So Yaakov says, tell me, Rochel, what's his area of speciality in crookery? What's he really good at? What are you worried about? Omrale, she said to him, Isli achto the kashisha minoy, I have an older sister, v'loy minso b'li mikamo, and I tell you right now, there is no way he will let me get married before her. So if you think you're going to do that, he will crook you, and you can be sure it's not going to come off. So they were ready for him, they knew it was going to happen. Omrale, he said to her, don't worry about that, Rochel, ochiv ani b'ramos, I can match him in crookery. Says Yaakov. This is the Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. Yaakov, the simple man, the straightforward man, who sits in yeshiva and sits in kollel and learns all the time. This is the Yaakov whose most important middah, his most important characteristic, is not chesed as Avram's was. It's not gvuro as Yitzchok's was. His most important characteristic, this is the father of emes. Yaakov's gift to the world was truth, was emes. And here Yaakov's sitting talking to Rachel and talking about the biggest crook in the world, the most outstanding specialist crook in the whole world. And he says, don't worry, I can handle him, because Ochiv ani b'Ramos, I can match him, I'm his brother when it comes to Ramos. Don't forget we're relatives, and I can cheat him just as effectively as he can cheat me. Amrullah, she was shocked. Umishari luhu l'tzadiki l'sigiyu b'Ramoso. Do you mean to tell me that a tzaddik is allowed to be a cheat? My father, okay, is not a tzaddik, so he cheats. But you, Yaakov, are you trying to tell me that you could be a cheat also? What does Yaakov answer? Yeah, sure. Nothing wrong with that. And there's a posuk for it. Im nova tisabo v'im ikesh titata. If you're dealing with a crooked person, be crooked. If you're dealing with a sly person, deal slyly with him. You can't deal straight with crooked people. You see, it's a clear posuk, clear heter. I told the ladies that there's a computer program nowadays that allows you to put in the shaila you want, put in the question, and put in the answer you want, and it will quote you the source to back you up. And so here you've got one. If you want to cheat in business, here's a Mefurusha Chazal, authored by no less than Yaakov Avinu, that yeah, if you suspect that the other person's cheating, you can cheat too. And many, many people quote this. Many people base their dishonest actions on this Chazal. It's just one example of how one can twist Chazal. But it's there, that's what it says. And she says, do you mean to say a tzaddik can be deceitful? She says, yes. So where's all this kedusha that Rav Shimon Shkop is talking about? He's going into a business deal. If you're already in the business deal, no. Okay, so now you've got to get yourself out. Maybe survival, who knows what. But he's not yet dealing with Lavan. He's going to go into business with Lavan in the knowledge that he's going to have to crook and be deceitful in order to be able to survive. Is that kedusha? Is that doing things l'tovas haklal? Is that making sure that all your actions are only for the good of society and not for yourself? Is that kedusha? And what I want to tell you about this evening, which is our last shiur of the year, is a very, very beautiful piece of Rabbi Isaac Scher. It gives us some kind of understanding of how Yaakov operated. And this is the added dimension that the Jew has in the way he operates. Yes, it's true, as I said last week, when a person's survival is at stake, he suspends his ethics. And even Rav Shimon Shkop says, don't think you can become like the Ribbono Shel Olam where you only work for the good of the community. Chayecha kodmim, your life comes first. There are times when you've got to take care of your own matters. But even in taking care of your own matters, there are ways to do it without compromising that element of kedusha, of the sanctity of being involved in doing what is in the good of the community and being the Kaddish Shem Shemayim. Rabbi Isaac Scher doesn't buy Yaakov's answer. When Yaakov says, but Lavan, I was afraid, ki yoresi ki yomati pentigzol es b'nei secho me'im. I was afraid you would kidnap my wives, you would take your daughters, and I wouldn't be able to leave. I'm sorry, that's why I did it. What can I do? Not the way I wanted to leave, but I was scared. Rabbi Isaac Scher doesn't buy that. Why not? For a few reasons. Who is Yaakov? Remember when Yaakov comes to the well and he sees the shepherds there and everybody's gathering and he says to them, "Hein oed hayoim gadol loy eisei yosef hamikneh hashku atzoinu l'churu." Why are you all lazing around the field, the well here? This is your master's time, this is not your own time. Why don't you water your flock and move on? They said, we can't until everybody's come together, and then we can roll the stone off the mouth of the well, and then we'll be able to feed the flock. But until everybody's together, we can't do it because the stone is too big. Says Rashi, because the stone was enormous. There's no way a few of us can move the stone off the well. So we have to wait until everybody's here, and then when everybody's here, we can roll the stone off the well. So imagine the situation. There's Yaakov, the Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. What has Yaakov been doing all these years? He's been learning Torah. So So he hasn't been going to gym, and he hasn't been working out, and he hasn't been running, and he hasn't been, he's been sitting in yeshiva all this time. And these shepherds that he's busy speaking to, they've been in the outdoors, they're rough shepherds, they've been working with the sheep, they've been, you can imagine what they look like, real strong, healthy shepherds that he's dealing with, real outdoor type. And he says to them, why all this delay? And they say, because it's impossible for a few people to move off the stone, we need a whole crowd of us to move off the stone. So get the picture of what used to happen. 20, 30 of these shepherds used to come, huge, massive, like South African rugby players. And when they were all together, they started heaving and pushing the stone off. That's the scene that used to be there. He was still talking to them. Rachel comes. She's a royal, she's a shepherdess, the only woman there. And when Yaakov saw Rachel, Vayigash Yaakov, Vayogel Esoeven Me'alpia Be'er, Yaakov walked up and he moved the stone off the well. Says Rashi, he moved the stone off the well. Kemi Shemavir Es Hapakak Me'alpit Saluchis, like you pull a cork out of a bottle. And he doesn't mean a champagne cork out of a champagne bottle. He means an ordinary cork out of an ordinary bottle. It's like that, he just moved it. Well, what about, how could he do that? So you see the strength that Yaakov had. See the enormous power and strength that Yaakov had. Yaakov wasn't a little nothing, he wasn't a little nobody. It's very tragic that our picture of great people is one that contains in it such weakness. When we think of great people, we think of great brains, and that's not what great people are. These great people were great in every way. They were brilliant, they were strong, they were powerful. There was power and potency in every part of their personality. That's what Gadlus was. Gadlus wasn't weakness. Yaakov had more physical strength than dozens of these massive shepherds who used to spend their lives in the outdoors. That was Yaakov. And so much so, it wasn't just Yaakov, it was the whole family. Chazal say that when the brothers came down to Egypt to try and get food during the famine, they saw Menashe. Menashe must have been a little boy at that time. Menashe was Yosef's child. And they saw how strong he was, and they said, Eino elu mibeis abo, this child is a relation of ours, because nobody else has that kind of strength. They realized that Menashe must be from the house of Yaakov, because they had such koyach, they had such gevura. And Shimon and Levi, you'll remember, wiped out the whole city of Shechem. Two people, single-handed, wiped out the entire city of Shechem. These weren't weaklings. So when Yaakov says, I was scared of you, Lavan, what's he scared of exactly? Yaakov alone could have taken Lavan and his band of people. But Yaakov wasn't alone. He had his children with him. He had them all there. Reuven, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Shimon, all of them were there. Can you imagine the strength and the power that he has? And he's about to meet Esav. He prepares himself to meet Esav. And he's ready to take Esav on. And Esav comes with an army of 400 people to wipe him out. And he's ready to take him on. He's not 100% confident that he'll win, but he feels he has a reasonable chance. Esav, an army general, comes out with an army of troops to wipe Yaakov out, and Yaakov's ready to take him on. But little Lavan's going to come with a few shepherds from the kraal, and Yaakov says all of a sudden, Ki yoreisi, I'm afraid, Ki yomati pentingzul esbunai secho mimi, I'm afraid you would take my wives away. Can you imagine Yaakov standing aside and watching Lavan taking his wives away? He would have wiped him out. So Rabbi Isaac Shur just doesn't buy the answer that Yaakov gives. It just doesn't make sense. He says, no sense at all. So what does he mean then? So Rabbi Isaac Shur takes you through a projection. What would have happened had he asked permission to go? Lavan would have said no. What was Yaakov worried about? So Lavan would have said no. That would have meant that Yaakov would have to fight. And of course Yaakov would win. Of course Yaakov would wipe Lavan out. But what would that look like for Lavan? How would Lavan then be able to hold his head up in public? What kind of a Chilul Hashem would that be then? Finally, the Godel is gone, Yaakov's gone. You see the fight he had with his family before, a couple of dead bodies still lying over there. Not a simple thing. Imagine what the consequences of that fight would have been. Of course it would have been victory. But victory for who? Victory for Yaakov and loss for Hashem. That's what would have happened. Victory for Yaakov and loss of dignity for Lavan. And although Lavan was a wicked man, Lavan was a relative. And if you notice, that relationship is very, very important to him. When Yaakov first sees Rachel, look what it says. Vayehi kasher ro Yaakov es Rachel bas Lavan achi imoy. When Yaakov saw Rachel, the daughter of Lavan, the brother of his mother, ves tzoin Lavan achi imoy, and the flock of Lavan, the brother of his mother. Don't we already know that Lavan is the brother of his mother? Vayigash Yaakov vayogel es soeben me'alpi ha-be'er, and Yaakov went and removed the stone from the top of the be'er. Vayashk es tzoin Lavan achi imoy. And he waters, he feeds the flock of Lavan, the brother of his mother. Three times in one pasuk, the brother of his mother. Why does it tell us that? Because the reason he's taking care over the sheep, and he's relating this way to Rachel and to the sheep, is because of Lavan achi amoy. At the end of the day, Lavan is his mother's brother. And if he respects and loves his mother, he respects and loves her brother. That's just part of the family deal. That's part of Kibud Avayim. And Rabbi Isaac Shur says that's why he respected Esav. In next week's Sedra, when he meets Esav and he goes and he talks so flatteringly to Esav, Rabbi Isaac Shur says that's not flattery. He really meant it when he said, "My master Esav, how much I think of you, how much I value you." Well, that wasn't just deceit. I value you not because of who you are in your own terms, but because you are my father's firstborn. And for that I owe it to my father. That's all that is. You're the son of my father. That's part of Kibud Av. That's part of my responsibilities to my father. And so here too, although Lavan was a Rosha, Lavan is his brother's mother. And Yaakov is not willing to harm the dignity of Lavan. As wicked as Lavan is, Yaakov is not willing to harm the dignity of Lavan. And so he simply works out, Lavan, the reason I ran away in the middle of the night was to save your dignity, not to damage your dignity. Had I not run away in the middle of the night, I'm telling you right now, we would have had a fight. And yes, I would have won. I wouldn't have lost a single person. You would have lost. But you would have lost your dignity as well, and I would have been a chilul Hashem. And you would have caused me to act against my mother's brother. And that I'm not willing to do. I would rather suffer the indignity. Imagine what the newspapers said the day after Yaakov left. Imagine headlines in the Sunday Times. Great rabbi leaves overnight in a rush. The employer says, you know, who knows what Lavan gave as the reasons. What's Lavan going to say? He ran away in the middle of the night because I would have kidnapped his wives had he gone in the daytime. He wouldn't have said that. So when the reporters came to Lavan to say, "Lavan, is it true? Is it true that Rabbi Yaakov left in the middle of the night and took everything and just disappeared with half your flock? Is that true?" And imagine what Lavan would have said. I would not like to comment on the circumstances of his departure. I would not like to detract from his dignity. Please, can we just leave it there? And the press would say, you can imagine when we asked Lavan why, he said he preferred not to comment. And who knows what would have been? But can you imagine the indignity that Yaakov suffered? Why did he suffer that? To save Lavan's indignity. That's why he suffered. To save Chilul Hashem, that's all. To minimize Chilul Hashem. Rather let me suffer the indignity than let Lavan suffer the indignity. So here you see, yes, Yaakov's doing it for his own survival. Yaakov has to disappear in the middle of the night for his own survival. Yaakov has to take his children, he has to kidnap the daughters of Lavan for his own survival. But in so doing, he protects the dignity of others. Even in acting for his own survival, all that he does, every step of the way, is Latovas HaKlal. What's best for everybody else? Not just what's best for me. How even in my own survival can I make a contribution? A contribution to Kiddush Hashem, a contribution to the dignity of Lavan. Even though I'm fleeing from him, even though he's a Rosha. Even in that situation, I have to make some kind of a contribution. How then do we understand the sticks, the funny mottled sticks that he put in the water to make the pregnant sheep give birth to spotted lambs? What do you think Lavan said when he saw this? He saw every day the sheep went out to drink, Yaakov's putting these funny pieces of wood in the bottom there. Lavan must have asked him, "What are you doing?" And Yaakov must have said, "I want to increase the number of spotted sheep." And Lavan must have laughed and said, "Do you know absolutely nothing about genetics? Do you really think that a lamb is going to look at a spotted piece of wood when it's drinking and it's going to give birth to a spotted sheep? Is that what you think?" So what do you think Yaakov answered? What did Yaakov answer? No, Ataka don't know anything about genetics, and yes, I do think that they're going to give birth. But that's what kind of nonsense? Yaakov must have answered, I don't expect it to work genetically. I expect it to work as a nes. It will be a miracle. Because I need income, you've deprived me of income, and I believe Hashem takes care of tzaddikim, and you wait and see what will happen. That's all. And the reason I'm doing this is because miracles don't happen without some kind of physical aid. So this is the aid that I'm doing. This is the kind of natural circumstance that I'm providing for the context of the miracle. But it will be a nes, it will be a miracle. And you should see from that, Yaakov. You can imagine how the conversation went from then. Lover, and if I'm right, you'll have to acknowledge God. Have to be. Because you've said to me there's no genetic foundation for what I'm doing. Is that right, Lover? And Lover said yes. And Yaakov must have said to Lover, Lover, do you want to back out of the deal now? And Lover must have laughed and said, if you're so foolish to think that by making these spotted pieces of wood, it's going to affect the percentage of spotted sheep, you're out of your mind. I don't have to back out of the deal. And Yaakov must have said, and what if I'm right, Lover? Will you give up your idolatry? If I'm right, will you serve the Ribbono Shel Olam? That's what he wanted. He didn't just want the spotted sheep. Of course he had to look after his own economic survival. But he does it in a way that runs the chance, at least, of providing Lavan with the opportunity of reaching an understanding of truth. That would provide Lavan with the opportunity of recognizing Hashem. That's the contribution that he really makes. So that even in his own survival, even in the struggle for his own survival, Yaakov Avinu is always making a contribution to the other person, always trying to enrich the other person, always trying to enhance the other person. And so when Rachel says to him, my father's a crook, my father's a real sly person, and Yaakov says, and what is the area of his crookery, and what is his area of speciality? And she tells him, and then he says, don't worry, Ochi Vani Beramos, I can match him in crookery. And she says, "Umi sharulu la tzadiki disigu b'ramusa, can a tzadik be a ramai?" And he answers, "In yes, in nova titabar v'mekesh titapel, that yes, you're allowed to because of the posuk. That doesn't mean that if a person's a crook, you can just do what you want to save yourself. If a person's a crook, you can deal with him to try and bring him around to honesty. You can deal with him to try and show him how things are meant to be. You can deal with him in order to try and show him the straight way that needs to be." And to use these kind of methods that Yaakov Avinu used, but he didn't use them just for his own advantage. He used these to try and be Makariv Lovan, to try and bring Lovan around. He used these methods to take care of Lovan's dignity, not to attack Lovan's dignity. And here we see the extent that Chazal go in the understanding that they have of the way we operate. The Reb Shimon Shkop goes a step further and says that because of this need for survival, this need that people have to take care of themselves also, Hashem implanted in a person the most amazing ego, the most incredible desire for self-fulfillment. In the essence of the creation of man, Hashem implanted in man self-love in enormous proportions. He wants it. Because they say in Kabbalah, Reb Shimon Shkop brings, that the reason that Hashem created the world is that we should be able to receive our goodness from Hashem by deserving it, by earning it. Because we have such big egos that if we get handouts, we get humiliated. We don't like to be given things for nothing. We like to believe that it's our own, it's ours. That's part of that ego that Hashem put inside us. That's part of that self-awareness, that desire, that craving for self-satisfaction and self-fulfillment that Hashem gave us. That's part of life. And He wants it in us. And it's something that needs to be preserved. But Reb Shimon Shkop carries on to warn the dangers of that. And he gives an example and he says, if a person makes a lot of money, it's very easy for him to say, it's mine, I made it, it's my own, and I'm very proud of it. What happens if he adopts the belief that really Hashem gave him the money? If he really believes in Hashem properly, what does he have to say then? The money isn't mine, it belongs to God. That's very hard. And that's why the ego, together with wealth, pose a threat to belief. That one's belief comes under attack when a person with a great ego acquires a massive, a great fortune. Very hard for him to say, it's not mine, Hashem gave it to me. But Rav Shimon Shkok goes on and he says it's exactly the same with learning. A person learns and he struggles over a piece of Gemara and he struggles over his learning year after year after year, and he eventually becomes a big Talmid Chochem who knows, who understands, is creative in his thinking. It's very hard for him to say, this is a gift from Hashem, this isn't only mine. This is a gift, Hashem has given this to me. So that even learning, this is another chiddush that Rav Shimon Shkok says, that even great learning poses a threat.